This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Addiction is a quiet monster. Sometimes it lurks inside family or friends. Sometimes we look at it in the mirror. Today we start our month-long series on addiction. It isn't always about drugs. It can be video games, shopping, or even sex. Later we'll talk to a man who nearly lost everything to his gambling addiction. But first we take a closer look at the facts and myths about addiction. For more, we have Dr. Tim Fong, a psychiatrist and co-director of the University of California, Los Angeles Gambling Studies Program. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, can you give a working definition of addiction?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you look in the textbooks for addiction in terms of scientific criteria, you don't really see a clear definition, but what we like to use is a continued recurrent engagement of either drugs or behaviors despite causing adverse or negative consequences in a person's life.
Give me a sense of what, is there a difference, for example, between a chemical addiction and a behavioral addiction?
Well, a difference in the sense that a behavior is causing person's problems in the life, whereas the other one with a chemical addiction, it's thought that it's the drug itself that's causing changes in the brain and result in behavioral problems. But fundamentally, as we learn more and more about the neuroscience and neurobiology of addiction, we're beginning to see a lot of overlaps in terms of the biology, but there are certainly differences in the psychology and social aspects of addiction.
Recently, over this sort of past couple decades, people have talked about things like online addiction, video game addiction. How does that play into who we are today as human beings? What makes those addictive patterns, I guess, if, you know, they're not substances?
Well, one of the things, the term that people are using, they've used things like lifestyle addictions, behavioral addictions, process addictions. I think fundamentally what we're talking about, for instance, would cavemen have, you know, gambling addiction? Would they have, quote, shopping addictions? No, probably not, but they would have differences in some sort of problems related to controls of reward versus inability to control impulses. So I think one of the biggest things that we see is that too often we see people labeling, oh, this behavior is just, quote, an addiction or a disease, where many times it may actually be just a variant of excessive behavior that's part of the natural social context of things, or maybe more simply it may be a byproduct or secondary behavior from underlying depression or anxiety that's actually going on. So certainly one of the things we need to know more about is what are these exact, again, biomarkers, and what are these exact biological causes of what, quote, or unquote, pathological behaviors versus those are just excessive behaviors that are done in the context of just, you know, social settings.
I want to bring in Dr. John Grant, an associate professor of psychiatry at the University of Minnesota. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. I asked Dr. Fong, what is addiction? I want to hear your answer as well.
Hearing part of what he was saying, I tend to agree. I think it's really when any behavior, I think more, you know, historically a use of a drug, but now we recognize any behavior becomes so excessive that it really interferes with people's lives in a really meaningful way, and people lose control over whatever the behavior is.
What do you think are the changes in addictive behavior patterns between, say, two generations ago and now, in terms of what are the top addictions now, do you think?
Well, other than, you know, drugs of abuse, which I think have always been, and alcohol, which have largely been the primary addictions, you know, I think that we see that with increased availability of certain behaviors, that we're seeing a greater addictive side to those behaviors, such as gambling, sex, are two of the ones that are now so readily available to people, as well as spending money, which can also be an addictive behavior.
When you think about the overall patterns of addiction in society, what do you think, and I'm going to ask you as well, Dr. Fong, in a second, but Dr. Grant, what do you think it costs this country that so many people have addictive behavior patterns?
Well, the costs to society, I think, are really great. People people are unable to function at the highest level of productivity. Dr. Fong mentioned how depression can often lead to some of these. Actually, depression can be a byproduct of many addictive behaviors, so that you also get people who are feeling so guilty and embarrassed by their behavior that they become severely depressed, that they need to be hospitalized. And families are torn apart by these behaviors. So I think the ripple effect of addictive behaviors is enormous.
Dr. Fong, I'm going to change this question a little bit. Given the cost of addictive behaviors, what is the medical world doing about it? You are part of that medical world.
Well, I'll just tell you a brief story. I mean, when I went through medical school and psychiatry residency training, very little training on substance abuse, and very minimal or essentially non-existent training for behavioral addictions like gambling, video game addiction, sexual addictions. And one of the things that Dr. Grant and I are really kind of pushing forth is this idea of really training all healthcare professionals to understand that the impact of addictions, whether it be substances or non-substances, actually can have a very profound medical and psychiatric impact on the individual, on family, and on society. As just some statistics, we know that $500 billion a year is lost to American society for drug-related addictions. We don't know that global number for behavioral addictions because many times these are hidden addictions. So when you have, for instance, with gambling, when you have suicides or even homicides or crime committed or drug overdoses, many times the root cause may be the gambling addiction, but it's not very clearly spelled out or obviously linked from the action to the behaviors and consequences.
Dr. Fong, we're actually going to be talking in a moment with a recovering gambling addict in the Los Angeles areas. And here in Los Angeles, certain parts of South LA, for example, have casinos, and a lot of casinos are in more working class neighborhoods. So how does the concentration of what you are addicted to, like a casino, like gambling, how does a concentration of availability affect someone who may have a problem?
Well, you know, this is a question that people have been looking at for a long time, saying if we introduce new casinos in new areas, will that drive up the rate of pathological gambling or gambling addiction? It's very much, you think about, of all the addictive behaviors, what's the most available? You know, cigarettes, but also spending and now gambling. Here, as an example, in Los Angeles, there are several casinos located in urban settings, but there are several casinos located in rural settings or high socioeconomic settings as well. What I can tell you is that what the data shows in California, that roughly about 4% of all Californians have some sort of problem controlling their gambling. But the highest rates are those who are African-Americans, disabled, or unemployed. And those rates are actually significantly higher than the 4%. Now, what we don't know is that because these casinos are located in urban environments, or are there some sort of biological and cultural social risk factors that predispose those groups to develop higher rates of gambling addiction?
Dr. Grant, addiction is certainly not limited by money. We've seen any number of celebrities fall, sometimes die, to chemical addictions. But do you think that there are issues that affect people who really are economically disadvantaged in some way? I mean, you spoke about depression. We're in a tough economic time, and being strapped can be depressing. How does economics link into this, if at all?
Well, you know, to build on what Dr. Fong had said, you know, there is this association with higher rates of, for example, gambling addiction among lower socioeconomic groups. And these are the people that can, you know, are least available or least able to really deal with the repercussions of their gambling. And yet the gambling is sort of marketed as this enticement of you can get out of poverty, you can get out of your bad financial situation if you win big at the casino. So in part, much of the gambling is marketed toward these people who, again, can really not afford to take part in it. And I think that to get back to your point about what the medical establishment can do, I don't think that we do enough to educate people, particularly in who are going through financial difficulties in lower economic brackets, about the real potential addiction of many of these behaviors, particularly gambling.
Well, Dr. Fong and Dr. Grant, I want to thank you both for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Tim Fong is a psychiatrist and co-director of University of California, Los Angeles' Gambling Studies Program, and Dr. John Grant is associate professor of psychiatry at University of Minnesota. He spoke to us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, Minnesota.